Welcome, everyone. Boy, I didn't expect this many people here today. I thought some of these were some easy bills, but obviously, well, maybe they are easy bills. We'll wait and see. I would first like to bring to everyone's attention that Senate Bill... do I open a work session? I mean, a public hearing to say it's going to go to a work group?
I don't know.
What do you want
to
do?
Well, Senate Bill 146 and Senate Bill 148 are two bills that I am going to assign to a work group. There is some issues that need to be worked out with the Oregon Medical Association as well as the Board of Medical Examiners. And I have talked with Dr. Bates on this issue. He is willing to head it up. And I said I want to then return to these bills on February 15th. Dr. Bates said he would be more than happy to convene the meeting. And, yes, he would. If there are any amendments, we would have them to the director, to our administrator before that time so that we could deal with this issue. So I'm just curious if I need to open a public hearing on these for the committee purposes to discuss.
Can you open a work session to assign them somewhere?
I need to open.
Yeah, yes, I think you do. To
okay.
Clear the record as to what direction you're taking.
Excellent. I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 146, and I will be assigning Dr. Bates to convene a meeting between the Board of Medical Examiners and the Oregon Medical Association to come to agreement and submit amendments so that we will be able to reschedule this for February 15th. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, Dr. Bates, you also named Senator Bates. Just for the
Senator
record.
Dr. Bates, yes.
Just to add that to the record. And then your intent, Madam Chair, with regard to the two bills which have been posted for public hearing, how do you wish to proceed with that, given that we may have people here who came to testify?
That's right. Could I see the list of those who have signed up for 146 and 148. No one has signed up. I had already talked to the parties beforehand, so they are aware of this work group that's going to happen. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 146, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 148. We will do the same thing with Senate Bill 148. It will be assigned to a work session with Senator Bates to work with the Oregon Medical Association and the Board of Medical Examiners. Any discussion? Okay, I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 148. All right. All right, I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 147 to start out with. 147. Kathleen? Haley?
Good morning. My name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners. Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, the board comes before you today to ask that the name of the Board of Medical Examiners be changed to the Oregon Medical Board, which more accurately reflects the board's purposes and procedures in this century. When the legislature created the board in 1889, for many years it's been known as the Board of Medical Examiners, which reflected the fact that the board actually did examine each candidate for licensure. However, that has changed in the event of national examinations. And there's often confusion between the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners and the County Medical Examiners. So we were hoping that renaming and making clearer for the public that it's the Oregon Medical Board that actually handles complaints as well as licensing and discipline of physicians and other healthcare professionals. Senate Bill 147 does not carry any fiscal impact and does not take effect until January 1, 2008, which would give the board plenty of time to make the adjustments in its stationery and so forth. This is a simple yet important step that we think moves the board forward into this century. Thank you for your time and attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
I have a comment. We now have the Oregon Medical Association, which comprises the physicians in the state, and the Oregon Medical Board, which oversees all health boards, so to speak. Do you think that will offer a problem?
Chair Monis Anderson, I don't, because the Oregon Medical Board is a state agency and the Oregon Medical Association is a professional association, so I think there's enough of a distinction.
Okay. Is there any discussion? All right. Thank you. Is there anyone else to testify on this? I assume there's no opposition. All right, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 147, and I'd like to open a work session on 147. Is there a discussion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 147 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 147 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carter.
Hey.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Senator Gordley.
Aye.
Chair Monis Anderson.
Aye. Motion passed. Senator Cruz, you want to carry this?
Sure.
I'm not keeping track of who's carrying, so we'll...
No tally sheet yet,
so maybe you'll help me so that I make sure everyone gets their chance to carry these bills. All right. I would like to open a public... Oh, did I close it? I close the work session on Senate Bill 147, and I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 145. Kathleen Haley. Yes, and please describe the bill.
Senate Bill 145 changes the name of the Diversion Program Supervisory Council, as well as makes some structural changes to the makeup of the council.
Good morning. Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Medical Examiners. This bill was introduced by the Governor on behalf of the Board of Medical Examiners and makes a number of changes to the Oregon Health Professionals Program. I'd like to emphasize that this bill was the result of a task force meeting over several years and a lot of hard work on the part of many parties. This was a collaborative effort by the Medical Association, the Psychiatric Association, physicians from our board, as well as the former dean of the medical school. The board proposes the following changes. The first would be to change the name in the statute from Diversion Program to Health Professionals Program, which is the common usage, and increase the size of the council members, the supervisory council members, from 5 to 7, one of whom must be a public member, and require the health professionals program personnel to report to the board any violations or suspected violations of the board's administrative rules concerning sexual misconduct. This does expand the scope and authority of the health professionals program, which currently serves chemical dependency diagnoses. 84% of all U.S. physician health programs are referring and monitoring mental health diagnoses. And if you look at our neighbors, California, Idaho, and Washington do have these programs. Physicians with chemical dependencies and mental health diagnoses are often inhibited from seeking treatment due to the stigma involved, as well as the potential fear of potential licensure complications or even the possible loss of a medical practice. Passage of this bill would facilitate those referrals of licensees with mental disorders by their treatment providers with minimal damage to those therapeutic relationships which are so essential. And they would not result in any public sanctions. I should emphasize here, too, that federal confidentiality guidelines do apply to this program. The monitoring and forensic support by adding mental health services to the health professionals program, the board believes, would also provide additional public protection in that it preserves that therapeutic relationship between the physician, who is a patient in this case, and his or her treating physician, and gets early treatment and intervention. More than 60% of those currently in the program, there are about 93 people currently in the program for substance use disorders, about 60% of those do have a dual diagnosis, that is, a secondary mental health diagnosis. Adding the mental health services will help that population as well. In 2006, in preparation for bringing this bill, the board had an external audit of the program, and it was noted that the 5-member council was too small to continue to manage it, particularly with the addition of the mental health. So they established the idea that we would increase that from 5 to 7. We also established a liaison committee between our board and the health professionals program. So that's comprised of 2 members of our board and 2 members of the council, and we are using the same physician who did the external audit to facilitate that meeting. In the 17 years that the program's been in existence, it has grown in size and complexity, and that's why we want to add a couple more members to assist. One of the concerns that arose from the task force in looking at the expansion to include mental health, while still preserving the confidential nature of the program, is what about those instances where the council or the board, the medical director for the program, may become aware of a sexual problem that the licensee may be trying to hide. And in those cases, the board felt, as well as the task force, that those cases should be brought forward to the board so that someone does not use the confidential nature of the program to hide that problem. We did ask you for one amendment to the bill because there was a drafting error, and we wanted to change the word misconduct to violation, and that's in section 4 sub 2 sub c, and adopting that language would then be in alignment with the administrative rules that the board has already promulgated related to sexual misconduct. Passage of this bill will allow the board and the health professionals program to continue its mission of keeping people in Oregon safe by keeping competent, conscientious professionals safe from harm. Now, this morning, the Medical Association did hand me some draft amendments, and at this point, we would urge you to pass the bill with a single amendment from the board because it's really the collaborative effort of many parties that came together to put this bill together. And there are some significant structural issues that need further deliberation, which really should be referred to the liaison committee that's been established. We had this external audit. That auditor recommended setting up the liaison committee. That committee is set up and ready to operate. And these issues really should go back to that committee for further review and study in the interim. And then if we want to make changes after, we can do that next session. But right now, we'd really like to see this mental health services get going and up and running. So I thank you for your time and attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
It's a wonder that we haven't had mental disorder as part of this from the beginning.
As we said yesterday.
Yes. So I applaud the committee's effort to bring this forward on the board. No questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would just like to establish for the record that in Senator Carter's Human Services Subcommittee, the board's budget is currently being reviewed. So we had a very thorough discussion about this particular item on yesterday, and those discussions will be continuing.
All right. Andres and Antonis. Oh, and he's even a constituent of mine. I can't believe I'm doing this.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the members of the committee. I'm Andy Antoniscus. I'm an internal medicine physician and an addiction medicine physician, and happen to be the current president of the Oregon Medical Association, and have had the pleasure of serving on the Supervisory Council for the Health Professionals Program for about the last 10 years, and have been actually the chair of the Supervisory Council for the for about the last 3 years or so. And I rise to support the proposed changes in the Health Professional Program to expand it to include mental health. This has been a very collaborative effort between the Oregon Psychiatric Association and the Board of Medical Examiners and the Supervisory Council, and as was stated, I think it's been long overdue. Most programs around the country that do this do include mental health, but I'd like to also give you a little bit of a historical perspective about the program and some of the amendments that that have been drafted to be included in the bill. The Health Professionals Program was created in legislation that was passed in 1989, and prior to that, actually, the Oregon Medical Association had been working to try to help professionals who had substance abuse problems to seek out help and treatment in lieu of sanctions or difficulties, and doing it in a collaborative fashion. But it was very labor intensive and costly, and so with working with the legislature and the Board of Medical Examiners, it was finally legislation was passed in 1989 that created the Health Professionals Program. But from our perspective, there are some nuances of things that have maybe changed a little bit from the way the program was originally formulated in 1989, and it was really meant to be a kind of arm's length distance between the Health Professionals Program and the Board of Medical Examiners, particularly from the standpoint of physicians feeling comfortable of coming in and seeking out voluntary, because this is purely a voluntary program for individuals to come in and seek help, and in lieu of disciplinary actions, and if you know, the stigma of potential stipulated orders and those types of things were there, it was felt to be possibly a deterrent from people seeking out help. And it's been a very successful from that particular standpoint. And the way the current legislation is drafted, it's a little bit confusing in that it says that subject to the approval of Board of Medical Examiners, the Diversion Supervisory Council shall appoint a medical director to serve at the pleasure of the council, and the medical director shall be an employee of the board. So it kind of puts the medical director in kind of a funny, situation, and they're an employee of the Board of Medical Examiners, yet they serve at the pleasure of the Supervisory Council, and who are they kind of accountable to, because they basically have two bosses. And what we're trying to do with one of the amendments is really to stipulate from the standpoint of the input of the Supervisory Council about performance audits and those kind of things of the medical director and the functioning of the program, and reporting that to the Board of Medical Examiners. It's been, it has become a little bit blurred over the years about how that functioning occurs, and that's the rationale around one of the amendments that was included. And it also states the medical director shall administer under the control and supervision of the council the diversion program for chemically dependent licensees. And so it makes the administrative aspects also the program have become very, very much more blurred from the standpoint of the Supervisory Council and the Board of Medical Examiners, and that arm's length, and we are concerned that potentially that if the board becomes significantly more involved in the running and administration of the program, and that blurring of those lines, that it may detract from individuals seeking out help. And so that's some of the rationale around some of the amendments that have been drafted to strengthen that administrative clause that is included in the original legislation. And also, because of the sensitivity of the materials that we're dealing with, particularly with substance abuse and mental health aspects, the amendment from the standpoint of being excluding the Supervisory Council meetings from the public meeting laws, we felt was a very reasonable amendment. So anyway, I'm glad to answer any questions or...
Yes, I would. I thank you, Dr. Antoniscus. for talking to me about this before the meeting. And I do have a question, though. Ms. Haley did say that there was a liaison process. Mm-hmm. And I would like your reaction on how, why you think that maybe we should take this on rather than going through the liaison process.
Well, the liaison committee is actually, we're having one of our first meeting today. So the committee is actually not met, the concern has to do with the potential of still that blurring of that arm's length aspect of the administration, and the supervisory council feels very, very strongly that needs to be maintained, and has become so blurred over the years that it really does significantly jeopardize the program, and potentially the liaison committee may have some input to that, but I'm not certain of that, and that's why we're trying to very much codify that in the statute, that it continues that arm's length aspect of the functioning of the program.
Yes.
Were you in a work group to put together this legislation?
Well, I'm sorry.
Were you in the work group to put together this legislation?
The work group?
Uh-huh.
It was a collaborative effort between the Board of Medical Examiners, the Oregon Psychiatric Association, members of the Health Professionals Program, and outside consultation also.
But you were a member?
Yes.
Did you bring this up at that time?
Some of the drafting of the language, again, the board is who drafted the wording and the language, so we did not actually see the final language up until very, very recently.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Yes, Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. If your amendments aren't included in the bill, would you support the bill anyway?
Correct.
Thank you.
Senator Carter, Dr. Antoniscus, what I'm trying to find out, as a statutory agency for physicians in this state, and with you having a person, I'm trying to look at my notes here and see, with you having a person that is representative from the association to the board, is that right? Is that what I was hearing? That on this committee of
are you talking about the supervisory council?
Yes, thank you. That's what I was looking
for. Okay.
So then, why do you find it necessary to create the kind of arm that, in terms of the supervisory council, that would actually give more oversight to the association as opposed to the board itself? Am I viewing this?
I'm not sure if I understand your question.
When I look at Health Professional Program Supervisory Council,
correct,
and I see them having some relationship to the board, and then I see this council having a little more authority than the board. Am I just reading into this, or okay? So yeah. Let me just read this again.
No, again, when you look at the structuring of the diagrams, the flow diagrams, in the Board of Medical Examiners and who's accountable to who, actually the more recent ones have actually not had the Supervisory Council involved at all. It talks about the medical director and the employees of the Health Professionals Program, but the Supervisory Council all of a sudden has dropped out of the flow chart of the organizational structure, and it really has markedly blurred, you know, who is accountable and responsible for what. And we really would like to, again, you know, resume the supervising and running and administration of the Health Professionals Program, which has become very, very blurred in the recent years. And that's what we're trying to codify with some of the amendments.
Any further discussion? Do you have any comments?
Claudia Black with Oregon Medical Association. I just wanted to clarify that we got the draft of amendments last evening, so we haven't had an opportunity to have them drafted at Legislative Council yet, the amendments that Dr. Antoniscus is referring to.
Okay. Thank you. If there's no Do you have any discussion here, Senator Cruz? I'm ready to move to the next person.
That'd be fine, Madam Chair. At some point, I'd like for Kathleen to come back up and explain what about these proposed amendments she doesn't like and why. But we can do it after the testimony.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. John McCulley, Oregon Psychiatric Association.
Here's your problem. I did a bad job of trying to ask a question. Is that the Board of Medical Examiners?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCulley. I'm representing the Oregon Psychiatric Association. I don't want to stand in the way of your quizzing Ms. Haley on the other amendments, but I do want to indicate that our organization does support Senate Bill 145. Members of our organization have been actively involved for many years in trying to get the law changed so that mental disorders can be treated in the health professionals program. There are a couple of reasons that you haven't, I think, heard about for our interest. One is dealing with the issue of physician suicide. One of the members of our organization who has been most involved with this is kind of taking this on as his cause of trying to prevent physician suicide. And we believe that by having this option for treating mental disorders within the health professionals program, there are opportunities to treat physicians who may be suffering from such issues that may lead to a suicide. So that's one reason. And the second really follows what we talked about yesterday and Senate Bill 1, just getting rid of the stigma and discrimination. There's no reason that a mental disorder should not be treated by any other health disorder, and if the physician can be treated and effectively done so, we think that should be an option that exists. So we support the bill for those reasons.
Wonderful. Questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much for bringing forth the issue of physician suicide. It's the first time I've heard that link to this issue. And could you say more about what is the incidence of physician suicide? What are we looking at in our state?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I'm obviously not an expert in this area, and I can get you in contact with a person who has done a lot of study in this area. We do know that there have been several physician suicides in Oregon as well as across the United States. We had a conference last fall, as a matter of fact, dealing with that very subject. And it's probably greater than most people realize that physicians, like every other member of the population, suffer from depression, and that can often lead to that decision to take one's life. So while I don't have I can get you the statistics, and I will do that, Senator Gordley, but it is an issue that is of concern to members of our organization.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing that forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Any other further discussion or questions for Mr. McCulley? All right, thank you. Kathleen and Haley, will you please come back up? Good morning. I would like you to go into a little bit more detail on, I know you just got notice of these amendments, and I know that this bill as it is has gone through extensive work and is a good bill, and I truly do want to pass it. I had talked with OMA this morning before the meeting, and I was saying that would there be any way that they could put that into another bill, have another bill, or wait and see if you until there had been more collaboration between the board and their proposal. I'd like to have you just state what your initial reaction is on the proposed amendments by OMA.
Thank you, Chair Mona Anderson, members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Kathleen Haley. I want to emphasize that the governor authorized us bringing this bill forward after many years of hard work on the part of a lot of parties. As Mr. McCulley said, there have been a lot of parties involved. We've had many, many meetings. We set up a separate task force to work on this. So there's been tremendous groundwork done and a lot of collaboration, a lot of good work, and consensus. There's consensus on this bill. And after this task force to see these major structural changes being proposed that I was given this morning, really inhibits that collaborative process. There is a liaison committee set up for just this purpose. There was an independent audit done of this program. The report came out this fall. That liaison committee is the avenue to look at these kinds of changes, not at the last minute when we've had such great consensus working forward on the bill. I don't want to lose this opportunity to provide this service to physicians. And really, when you're providing it to physicians, you're ultimately providing it to the patients of the state. So I really urge you to move this bill with our one amendment today and let the liaison committee handle these other structural issues where we can get consensus and come back to you in a couple of years.
That's true.
Yes, Senator Courtney.
Can I ask you, I didn't think I got a clear answer to my questions. Was this, the issues that the OMA is now presenting, were they discussed by the task force?
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Courtney, they were not, because we were focusing on the mental health aspect.
I understand.
Yes.
I just,
yes.
I'm not asking you to be defensive. I just
yes.
want to know.
I'm trying to think. Yes.
Did it come up in discussions with the task force, this regard, even though you were discussing? That's all I want to, trying to get that on the record.
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Courtney, no.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is this... Let me clarify again for the record. So this is something, though, that you, a task force or a work group or your liaison committee would take on to vet, because from just initial having explained to me, it makes sense. But I hate to make a decision in which not all of the players are at the table discussing this, because there are probably nuances that I may not see.
Chair Mona Sanderson, that's right. The liaison committee is equipped, and as I said, we have a very good facilitator to work with the group he's a psychiatrist, a physician who worked in setting up the liaison committee. He's the one that did the evaluation of the program, and he's intimately involved. He's known this program since it started. So we have great hopes for this liaison committee.
Question?
Yes, Senator Carter.
I'm feeling a little confused here. I was trying to ask my question, but I think I was so confused I couldn't ask it appropriately. In subsection 3 of the Senate bill amendments, of 145 amendments, that I don't know who, these came from OMA?
Yes, Dr. Antoniscus and
okay.
submitted them.
I just like them identified from now on. The Health Professionals Program Supervisory Council shall conduct and report to the Board an annual performance evaluation of the medical director. The Board shall consider the report of the Council in any employee evaluation of the medical director completed by the Board. This, to me, takes away, and clarify for me, this, to me, takes away from the statutory board, meaning the medical board, and it devalues it down to the point of a report coming from this supervisory council to you, as opposed to you having oversight of the actions that were taken place as a result of the person that is seeking professional help. Is that right?
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Carter, I think of the things that I've gotten to take a look at this morning, it is reasonable for the supervisory council to provide some information to the board in its assessment of the personnel, particularly because they are more involved in the clinical aspects. So I think that is reasonable, and I don't know that the liaison committee or the board would have a problem with that. There are several other major structural issues that are contained in these amendments that really do more appropriately belong with the liaison committee.
So your, Madam Chair, so your opposition at this point is not to these changes being made, but what it does, it's offset the decisions that everybody has
worked together so long on, and you'd like for this council to take this into consideration, since they have worked so long and you have balance and you have yes and all this kind of stuff. So you'd like for us to pass the bill, but that you, as a supervisory council and as the board, will take these in consideration during the interim, and the interim could be just until February, may I remind you and everybody else. May just be until February. And so if it's February, that means that you will be at work with these amendments through the supervisory council and come back to the legislature in terms of how you guys have worked this through. Am I?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Carter, that's right.
Okay, thank you very much.
And I think you're referring to the statement that that medical reports and records, I think the confidentiality, I think Dr. Antoniscus previously was wanting to make sure that confidentiality and what was shared, the public meetings laws, I think that he had brought up that would affect
Chair
that.
Chair Monis Anderson, that's also something that would be taken a look at by the liaison committee in conjunction with the council and the board and further discussion.
Okay. All right. What's the pleasure of the committee?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Gorley and then Senator Cruz.
Have we established who serves on that liaison committee?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Gorley, we have two members of the supervisory council and two members of the Board of Medical Examiners.
So they're all physicians? Well, for the exception of one public member.
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Carter, there is a public member on the liaison
right.
committee.
Okay.
Follow up?
Yes. Going back to what Senator Carter suggested and offered, Ms. Haley, what is your sense of urgency about how soon we need to get to this, these amendments that have been offered up this morning? And you've laid out where you think they fit in the process, but how quickly do you think we need to get to this, this matter? By the end of February, post the sine die, just trying to nail down.
Sure. Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Gorley, the evaluation that was done and completed in the fall of 06 has not been implemented. I think the first order of business for the liaison committee is to work through that, the recommendations of that evaluator. We also want to get this program up and running.
And the timeline for that process is what?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Gorley, the liaison committee will be setting the timeline and providing that to the board.
Okay. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I get more confused as the day goes on. So, Kathleen, I think from what I heard you, your response to Senator Carter was, you don't necessarily have issues with the content of these proposed amendments. Your issue is the process and going through the right form to get to this point? Or are there specific things in here that you think are problematic?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Cruz, I just received them this morning.
Right.
I would really, before I could even comment, I'd want to have our attorney look at it and our board members have an opportunity to take a look at it. As I said, I think the proper venue is really to move this through that liaison committee and let's get the program started.
Okay, I guess, Madam Chair, the liaison committee is meeting when?
Tonight.
And we, Madam Chair, we have an amendment coming. You had a technical amendment.
I think you already have it.
We have the amendment?
I think the one with the one word change that the...
Oh, I have not seen that, so...
That was requested by the Chair.
I think a part of the confusion on this end, let me speak for myself, is that we're talking about a couple of amendments here, and one is the amendment... proposed amendment dated January 30th, 2007, but the source is unidentified.
Okay.
And then there's the amendment that you're referring to that is now a part of Senate Bill 145, but I don't have that amendment, your amendment. So
The chair's hoarding them, so.
Madam Chair, can I take just a minute with you, please?
Yes. Yes, I had LC draft 145-1. It did come from LC, and for some reason the administrative staff never got it, and I don't know. It basically changes one word. So that's for Senator Carter also.
Ms. Carter. I understand.
Yeah. Do you want to make a copy of this for everybody then?
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
That's fairly self-explanatory.
Okay. Yeah. They don't need it. Never mind. Okay.
That still begs the other issue at this point. So.
Right.
Yes.
If you are comfortable gaveling out of public hearing and moving into work session, I would be comfortable moving forward. Again, just speaking for myself.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 145, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 145. Senator Gordley.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 145.
Amendment first.
The amendment. Thank you. Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 145.
Senator Gordley has moved the -1s. May I have it? Basically, which says that the word misconduct on page 2 of the printed bill, line 25, it deletes misconduct and inserts the word violation. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
No, Clerk Colarola. I think we need to be legal on this.
Senator Carter.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Senator Gordley.
Aye.
Senator Montes Anderson.
Aye. Amendment has been moved into Senate Bill 145-1 amendments have been moved into Senate Bill 145.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 145 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 145 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really have some concerns here. Quite honestly, Madam Chair, because as I read the proposed amendments from the OMA, they make sense to me, and I'm not sure what the problem with including them is. I guess I, at the same token, I don't want to stop this legislation from moving forward, and obviously can't, but so I guess the one caveat I'd like to put in at this point in time, because the liaison committee is meeting today, my hope would be that they would take a look at these and see if they have an opinion on to the validity, and if we were to hear a report back saying that these were acceptable, that we could have the ability to either amend on the House side or pull it back into committee to make those adjustments.
And thank you, Senator Cruz. The amendments make sense to me, but I do really feel there are some ramifications that if we pass them may put up a lot of red flags. And so I would really like it vetted with the Supervisory Council and or the Health Professional Council and the board. And if they can do that tonight, but knowing how things work, it may be a while, but I would agree with Senator Cruz. Any further discussion? Yes, Senator Courtney and then Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I like what Senator Cruz said, because it seems to me in the testimony we had here today, this task force did a lot of work.
Right.
This is an important piece of legislation, particularly in the mental health area, and you know how I feel about that. We need to move ahead. Even the OMA, I believe I'm not misrepresenting, supports 145, I believe the specific questions asked. I think OMA has raised some very interesting points. I just don't want to necessarily stop this bill at this time, given there's no opposition, all the work that went into it, and the need for it to go forward. How we get to the OMA structural change they want, I don't quite know. I was watching this dialogue. Frankly, I'm confused as to what groups are meeting when and where. I'll be up front with you, but I don't necessarily want the issue to go away. I just think this is too important at this time not to move it forward with this slight amendment. So I just want to add to what Senator Cruz said. Thank you, Chair Monson-Anderson.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much. I would just like to offer an observation just based on the testimony that has been provided. I have a question. I'm wondering if there's some relationship building that needs to go on between all of the parties involved, particularly those who brought forward the amendment today. It appears that there was a collaborative process that these amendments did not make it into that collaborative process, and it leads me to question why. And again, I'm questioning what is the quality of the relationship? Is there some relationship building that needs to take place? Don't know. But if that's the case, let's get started. Let's work on it and come back in a form that's more, what is the word? Productive. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Oh, Senator Carter.
Yeah. I do understand the concerns that OMA might have in terms of doctors being more receptive to going before that helping group of people and maintain their anonymity. But I think that the board has done a good job in the state in terms of keeping privacy rights and respecting the individual when things go wrong. I mean, as a matter of fact, you can look at what just recently happened to the doctor that moved to Australia. I mean, that has been going on for 5 years. And so at this point, I just think that they are going to work together, that these are, as they say in the church, they're brethren and their sisters, so you know they're going to try to keep the privacy to the group and not out people without that would make them be concerned about their professional titles and what they do. So I just think that that's going to happen, but I agree with Senator Gordley, Ms. Haley, that this issue is a very sensitive one, and I'm counting on the board through the Supervisory Council to take these issues up very, very soon, and let's find some collective wisdom in making everybody feel good about the direction in which they're going in their profession.
Thank you, Senator Carter. Is there any further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carter.
Hey.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Senator Gordley.
Aye.
Chair Monson-Anderson.
Aye. Motion passed. All right. Is there preference? Awesome. Senator Gordley?
Yes.
Do you want to carry this
sure.
one?
Thank
all right. All right, I'd like to close the work session on Senate Bill 145, and I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 155. And Bob Nickel. Bob Nickel is not here.
He was.
All right, where's 154, just in case?
Josh, we bring up 154. Thanks.
Oh, yes.
Five, four. I'm hoping this one will be a simple one, but there's only one person signed up for it, and he doesn't seem to be...
Madam Chair, I might suggest that staff explain the bill. I don't think we necessarily need testimony
on this. All right, please.
Have the written testimony, at least.
Okay.
Go ahead. Senate Bill 155 authorizes the Department of Human Services to administer programs to assist the development of drug and alcohol-free housing. It also changes the name of the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center to Blue Mountain Recovery Center, specifies suitable facilities for defendants under the age of 18 who are under court-ordered psychological observation and examination, maybe a secure intensive community inpatient facility designated by DHS rather than automatically going to a state institution, and it declares emergency, takes effect upon passage.
Okay. Bob Nickel has given us testimony. There's no opposition to the bill. Do you want to just take a moment to just quickly go through the testimony? And there's Bob Nickel.
I'll just say, Madam Chair, I don't have any problem with the bill as drafted.
Housekeeping.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Nickel. I'm Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services and responsible for addictions and mental health services. I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 155. I think the testimony has been distributed by now. These are largely housekeeping issues. I do just want to briefly comment on the change of the name to Blue Mountain Recovery Center. This is really originated in a petition that I received about 2 years ago from 60 patients at the state hospital, just about all of them. And we had been working for some time to move in what we consider to be a more recovery-oriented direction. And so I'm really gratified that we were able to bring this to the legislature to consider. But I want to give the credit where it belongs, and that is to the patients who signed that petition to me about 2 years ago. So I would be happy to answer any questions about the testimony.
Senator Courtney?
Could you just quickly, to the record, Section 5, is other things here too technical?
Madam Chair, Senator Courtney, yes, there are other technical things, and I need my staff
all
to
right,
give me...
That's fine. That's
the meantime, I apologize to the committee. I'm about to testify in another hearing two doors down, and so I'm running back and forth with not all of the material at my disposal. Madam Chair, Section 5, if you would remind me just what that...
It's if the defendant is 18 years of age or older, upon filing of the notice, the court in its discretion may order the defendant committed to a secure intensive community inpatient facility designated by the Department of Human Services for observation and examination as the court may designate for a period not to exceed 30 days.
Actually, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Is under 18. I'm sorry, if the defendant is under 18.
Yeah, this clause is placed in there to accommodate the fact that in the last 2 years we moved secure state hospital units for children and adolescents into community settings, so that we needed to have a change in the statutory language that allows us to do this in a non-state hospital setting.
And then the other is under Section 6, number 5 was added, directly or by contract with public or private entity, administer financial assistance, loan, and other programs to assist the development of drug and alcohol-free housing. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the reason for that is that in the last, really 5 years ago, we began to get into the development of alcohol and drug-free housing, and we really didn't have anything that clearly, explicitly stated in statute our authority to do that.
All right. Thank you very much.
These are not quite technical changes, if you want my opinion. I'm not opposed to the bill, but that means basically when we moved all those young people from the Oregon State Hospital facility into secure communities, we may or may not have the authority to do that. I'm just for the record, I mean, I'm not trying to sweat you, but that's
we'll save that.
That is rather significant. That is rather significant, with all due respect.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and you're right, President Courtney, it is, but this is catch up.
Can I ask just one little thing?
Yes, Senator.
I realize the emphasis in the first change is on psychiatric center versus recovery center, but you used the word Blue Mountain. Not to be really technical, Blue Mountain is not Eastern Oregon, if you know what I mean. It's in Eastern Oregon, right? So Blue Mountain was just like the Blue Mountain Community College. It's just in the Pendleton area. It's just Is there any particular reason for that?
Madam Chair, President Courtney, I think it reflected the fact that the facility is in Pendleton. It's right below Blue Mountain Community College, and I think that there is a sense, at least among the patients there, frankly, who are not necessarily all from Eastern Oregon.
Thank you. But they're also from Eastern Oregon, and Blue Mountain is a segment. I just, again, signals, we mean still, it can still include patients from wherever, even though it's Blue Mountain.
Madam Chair, President Courtney, that is correct.
As you went from Eastern. All right, thank you, Chair. I didn't mean to get overly technical about that.
We could call it the Courtney Center.
No.
But,
No. We don't do that.
All right, is there any further discussion?
Just a quick comment to Bob Nickel. I just want to recognize and honor the quality of leadership that you continue to provide around mental health issues and everything that comes through your office. You're doing a lot of heavy lifting. A lot of hard work occurred during the interim. And, again, just want to acknowledge, appreciate, and honor the quality of your work and those who work with you. We're going to get some good things done this session because of your leadership. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Courtney, thank you. I have to reference the words that President Courtney used yesterday morning at the NAMI breakfast, and that is, this is really team effort, and I appreciate, I'm very honored that I'm able to serve the state during a time of such great potential and change, but I really want to give the credit where it belongs to. I have 1,500 people who work with me.
Is there any further discussion? I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 155, and I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 155. Senator Gordley?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 155 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Gordley moves the Senate Bill 155 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carter.
Excused.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Senator Gordley.
Aye.
Senator, Chair Monizanderson.
Aye. Senate Bill 155, it has passed, and Senator Carter, I think, will... No, Senator Courtney will carry this bill. Okay. Now, I close the work session on Senate Bill 155, and I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 154.
Okay.
Would you explain the bill first? And
Senate Bill 154 provides that residents in a residential program for the primary purpose of receiving care, treatment, training, or support due to disability or dependency is not subject to landlord-tenant laws.
I'll start out with those. There are people against this bill, but I want to get some people who are for this bill first. So,
thank you.
Let's start with Dwayne Worley, Bill Breckenridge, and Mike Morgister. If all three of you could come up.
Can I add something?
Yes, please add something.
If you submitted written testimony, can you be sure to identify that? We had received a lot prior to the start of the meeting, and we need to make sure that it's in order.
Okay, please proceed.
Okay, I'll start. Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 154. My name is Michael John Morgister, and I'm the program manager for the Oregon Recovery Homes program of the Recovery Association Project. And just a little history, the model of home that we're talking about actually was formed in 1975 back on the East Coast, and Bill will get into that more, but in 1988 with the Anti-Drug Abuse Act, legislation was passed. Title 42 of the United States Code that described group homes for recovering substance users with three characteristics, that they were self-run, self-supporting, and must expel any person who returns to the use of alcohol and or drugs. And the provision in that code is that states who accessed mental health block grant funds would start a revolving loan fund to loan to groups of individuals in order to open up these homes. And in Oregon, in 1989, Oregon Recovery Homes was formed to do that process with the loan funds. And because of that, the first Oxford House, which is homes that, you know, started in 1975, was opened here in the state of Oregon. Oxford Houses have charters from a nonprofit called Oxford House, Inc., and the three charter conditions of an Oxford House are exactly the same as outlined in Title 42 of the U.S. Codes. In 2000, the state began to fund outreach personnel to work with these homes and to spread the concept into areas of the state where there wasn't this resource. And I was, you know, fortunate enough to be that first employee back in 2000. Since that time, the number of homes has grown to 145 homes and 20. Well, here in the state of Oregon, and what the Oregon Recovery Homes program does is offer technical support and outreach. So we have field staff who travel throughout the state to work with the network of peer-run homes. Since 1975, there's been no case of this model of home. It's a, you know, residential recovery program being under, you know, under the landlord tenant law until recently here in Oregon. And I'm not going to explain you know why that's important. There's other people here to do that, but it's, you know, for the safety of the other members of the home. I just want to make two points is that in I got clean in 1994, and I moved into one of these homes, you know, one of these Oxford houses, and it's an honor for me to work with the program, and we feel it's exempt, you know, from landlord tenant law because, you know, they've been operating since 1975 as a exempt classification, much like a treatment center. And when I moved in to an Oxford house, I wasn't looking for, you know, some place to live. You know, I lived on the streets for several years. I was just simply looking for, you know, some place to go, you know, some place where I could learn how to stay sober and clean. And, you know, our stance is that, you know, the reason that we're exempt from landlord tenant law is that the reason that we live there is for the service, not for the housing. And it's, and under landlord tenant law, we fear that, you know, to be able to expel a person that uses or drinks or gets, you know, violent, you know, in some way, would, you know, take up, you know, from 1 to 6 weeks. And, you know, I just ask you to consider if it was a home that you lived in, and you know, a person was doing that, you know, what it would be like to live
you know, with that individual?
We have 20 people, and so can you wrap up? And we're going to limit everyone to about 3 minutes because it'll just take too long. Okay.
Okay. Well, I'll finish with this: is that I understood the rules, you know, when I moved in, and the fact that I knew that I must leave if I use actually helped me to stay clean several times. And my fear is that if, you know, these homes fall under the landlord-tenant law, it will actually destroy Oxford Houses and the state of Oregon as we know it.
Thank you. Thank very you. Much. Go ahead. And I got a timer here, so
okay.
3 minutes.
Madam Chair, Moniz Anderson and distinguished committee members, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 154. My name is Dwayne Worley. I'm a grateful member of the Southeast Riverview Oxford House for Men and Children. I've been in Oxford for about 2 years now. That house is in Clackamas, Oregon. I'm also the chapter chair for Chapter 18. I oversee some houses and help them, make suggestions to them, try to guide them through some things if they have some problems. I'm here today to share my personal experience regarding the matter before you. I live with 8 other men and 4 children in my house. Since I've resided in Oxford House, myself, my children, and my fellow house members have experienced people using drugs in our home. I've also attended many meetings regarding members using drugs in Oxford. Relapse is very unfortunate, but it affects everyone in the house, including the children. Under Oregon law, parents are not allowed to have possession of illegal drugs or be under the influence or have their children around people who are. I know this all too well. My children were taken away from me by the Sheriff's Department and DHS for drug use in the home. Now I sit before you with 30 months clean in custody of those children back, and I owe a great attribute of that to Oxford. It gave me a safe place to move and to get custody of my children after treatment. That safety is in jeopardy. As it stands, if a member relapses in my house, I have to pack up my kids and leave until that member leaves so that DHS will not come in and remove my children from me. I moved into Oxford for the recovery, safety, and well-being for myself and children. So I ask these questions: why should we have to be displaced from our home when we are the ones that are doing the right thing? Why should my children be put into further danger by allowing someone on drugs to be in their house? As a drug addict, I did enough of that to my children and my addiction. I refuse to do that in my recovery. I've had to get them up in the middle of the night and take them to a safe house, remove them from the place they call home. Please take this testimony into consideration and help us help ourselves to recover. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it.
Madam Chair, members of the distinguished senators, my name is Bill Brackenridge, and I am the current state chair for the Oxford Houses of Oregon. In 1975, again, Oxford Houses were established by a group of men that their halfway house was in going to lose all their funding, and with through some suggestions from AA and the groups around them, they decided that they could probably try to do this on their own. The house, there was three simple rules. You pay your rent. If you were, if you went back to using drugs, alcohol, or had disruptive behavior tendencies, you were asked to leave the house. And thirdly, they had decided that the house had to be democratically ran on the basis of our whole United States Congress and how we operate. From that point, Oxford House has grown to 3 countries: Canada, Australia, United States. There are over 1,100 houses nationwide. 145 of those being right here in Oregon, with a little over 1,100 members and 200 children. In Oregon, we have four levels of accountability and networking that we go through for expulsions. The houses, we have a chapter devised of a group of houses. And then we have the state association, and then our next level after that would be World Services with Oxford House Incorporated. Through that network, we help our houses walk through the process of trainings, expulsions if needed, the any we look into the disruptive behavior type of deals so that somebody's not just trying to be booted for a personal reason. So we have those levels of accountability set in place for ourselves to help ourselves. Seven years ago, I was a practicing meth addict. I ran the streets of Salem. I was your basic thug. If you had what I wanted, I took it from you. Today, through the help of Oxford Houses, I learned a lot. I've learned a lot of valuable life skills. I've learned to work with people, work with other, you know, work with people on a level to where, and have them help me to where my violent tendencies are pretty much subsided. I'm not a perfect person. I still get upset, but these gentlemen that were in the house helped me immensely.
Can you wind up?
Yep. I've been sitting on the state association. I give back today what was freely given to me. And without Oxford Houses, I couldn't tell you where I'd be today. In conclusion, I'd like to say that I'd like to thank you guys in allowing me to share my testimony in support of Bill 154, and I'd gladly answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate it. Laura Guerrero, David Nass, Jeff Stiles.
That's close.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mona Zanderson and committee members. Thank you for hearing my testimony and support of Senate Bill 154 as written. I want to make a comment that I support the bill as it stands, not with any amendments. My name is Lori Guerrero, and I am a methamphetamine addict who has successfully had my children returned from DHS. I am alumni of the Sarah Oxford House, and I'm currently the state board co-chair for Oxford Houses Oregon. I serve in the capacity, this capacity as a volunteer, because I believe so strongly in the Oxford House model, the charter conditions, and the traditions that keep our houses safe and substance-free. The peer support that helped me learn a new way of life after using drugs and alcohol for 26 years. Without this support, while I lived in the Oxford House early in my recovery, I would have been more at risk of relapse. Knowing the consequences of using, I did not want to lose my membership in the house. But I had come home to another member. If I had come home with another member allowed to be there under the influence, I may have made different choices and not be where I am at today. And where that is a woman that has regained her self-esteem, living with my children that are here in the courtroom along with their huge family, and aware that I have a voice today. With nearly 5 years in recovery, I'm now employed with Volunteers of America as an alcohol and drug outreach worker, contracted to work with child welfare clients with DHS in East Multnomah County. I'm a member of the Family Involvement Team and Addiction Recovery Team, and my role is to help other parents that are at risk of losing their kids or have lost their kids because of drug alcohol engage in treatment. My goal is to reunite families in recovery, which often begins in an Oxford house. The agencies that I work with support Oxford House because they trust in the peer-supported environment to be sustained there while these services are being offered to their clients. In conclusion, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to share my testimony in support of Bill 154 as written and answer any questions.
You've seen the process. All right. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
My name is David Nace. I'm a property manager in Beaverton, Oregon, and I'm thank you, Mr. Chair Anderson, and the rest of the committee for allowing me to testify. I come here from a landlord's point of view who also owns two of these Oxford houses. I own a women's house and a men's house, both of which I probably would not rent to if these rules, you know, did not apply. And the fact is that they could expel people immediately if they were to relapse. And at this point, the way the current law is written, I also support landlord-tenant laws, and I also believe in most all of our laws, but I also believe that not all laws cover all situations, and I believe that some laws need to be amended, and 154 is a perfect amendment to that, or a perfect example of that. I believe that that as written right now, Oxford House is, you know, following the landlord-tenant law, will not be able to exist. For one, I will not rent to them. For one, if somebody does relapse, does go back to using, you know, illegal narcotics or alcohol, I cannot kick that one person out as a landlord. I have to kick the whole house out. And that is the way the law is written at this point. If I was to continue to rent to them, I'd want to see a bill like this, you know, pass, because it's impossible for me to make safe, you know, these houses. I happen to own these two, so I can do what I want with them. But the other houses that I manage and the other people that I manage these houses for will not allow criminal, you know, recovering addicts or people that have been convicted of crimes to rent their properties. And that's the stance of most property managers because of that very reason. It's what the homeowners want. And, you know, I happen to have a couple houses where I will. If they successfully graduate, you know, or spend at least 6 months to 1 year in an Oxford house, where I do have a few apartments where I'll rent to them. But in this case, if it's subject under landlord-tenant law, I don't see how Oxford is going to exist. Because it's simple as one of the women's houses, for instance, has their children have been granted to live in, you know, from DHS to live in that house. And as you heard in one testimony earlier, that those children will be taken away from that person if there's any drugs or alcohol used in that house. And if at this point it takes at least up to 6 weeks to expel somebody under the landlord-tenant law at this time right now. And I'm sure that Mr. Wall will cover that a little bit more. But at this point, I would like to stand in support of this bill. I am, you know, not only as a landlord myself, but as an owner of Oxford houses, and also as an addict myself, who has been in recovery for 17 years now. So we do recover, we do make good with our life, and I owe that a lot to Oxford. So.
Thank you very, very much. Jeff.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Jeff Stiles. I'm employed by the Volunteers of America as a outreach worker for the Oregon, or for the Department of Human Services. I'm Lori's co-worker, actually. I'm a member of the Art and Fit teams at JDH out in Gresham. And I moved into an Oxford house about 9 years ago, and after 2 years of living there, I ended up using New Year's 2000, actually. And you know, if it hadn't been for the fact that I had to leave immediately and go get some help, I may not be here today, and my roommates who were living with me at the time, you know, if had I been allowed to stay, may have ended up getting loaded too, you know, and some of us may have ended up dead. We refer a lot of our clients to Oxford Houses, and it's been said before that, you know, they have to be a safe place for these children, the people trying to reunite with their kids. And originally, Oxford Houses, they were opened for the peer support, you know, peer-to-peer support, kind of like, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. There's more, what, millions of people have recovered in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what Oxford Houses are about. It's about one addict helping another stay clean. We don't want to be in the business of being landlords. None of us are smart enough when we first get clean to take on that role, you know. And, you know, that's not the primary reason that we move into an Oxford House. It's for the peer support. It's a form of behavior modification, you know, by that peer support. And I'm in support of Bill 154, and we've got to expel those people who use immediately. We don't have 6 weeks to wait to get them out. If we do, you know, the whole house can end up using, you know. So anyways, thank you for allowing me to share, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Question? Senator Gordon?
Madam Chair, thank you. Not a question. I'm just very grateful for all of the folks who've come forward thus far. And at this point, I need to apologize because I'm going to need to step out of the room for a press conference speaking out against the war in Iraq. But I want to say, someone said in their testimony, referred to this room as a courtroom. It's a hearing room. It's your room. It's your room. And this process works because you came, because you're here. And I also want it to be heard on the record at this point that I am also firmly in support of the bill and look forward to moving the bill when the chair feels it's the appropriate time.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'd like to call to the... we're not. It will make it easier for us if you don't clap, even though we may feel like clapping. All right. We have a couple people say that they live more than 100 miles, and I need to get them up here. Lois Soto.
Luis.
Frank Wall, although I think Multnomah is closer than 100 miles, and Carolyn Gabby Escalera. You all marked that you live further than 100 miles.
Madam Chairman, that was a mistake on my part. If there's somebody else that's 100 miles.
Okay, well, you're here. Let's go. Okay, we are supposed to be out of here at 10:15, and I want to get Ed Johnson and Ari Rapkin on board, and we will be continuing this. I truly want to make sure everyone who wants to testify, so we will be doing this follow-up on Monday to finish the testimony if there are those of you who can still come back. If you can't, please let the administrator know. Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair and distinguished committee members, my name is Luis Soto. I've traveled here from the Medford area in support of Bill 154. And I also entered into an Oxford House 4 years ago, and under, you know, with the encouragement of parole and probation and DHS, I'd lost my children. And definitely needed that structure and that amount of accountability, where if I was to relapse, that I was to be removed. I lived in this home for a year. My children have been returned to me. I also now work in, I work for, in the evenings I work for Contract Inc. And I am a drug and alcohol and domestic violence counselor now. These things would have never happened if I didn't have Oxford House as a foundation in the very beginning. I entered an Oxford House of 10 days after leaving a treatment facility, and I was returned to the same neighborhood I was using in. And my chances would have been about nil. So I think it's very important that we are allowed to ask members that relapse or are extremely disruptive to leave immediately, because working with DHS and in the recovery community down there, you definitely need that safety for the children and for the recovering addict. I'm kind of going through like some stage fright right now, and I'm all.
You're doing fine. You're doing fine.
I think I'm getting my. I feel it's important enough that I did drive up here last night so that I could share with you that this is. I think this is a very viable issue that. I'd just like to say I'm in support of 154, and I hope. Thank you for letting me.
Yes. Well, thank you for coming. That's a long ways to come, too. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Mona Sanderson, and committee members, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to submit testimony today in support of Senate Bill 154. I don't know if I'm 100 miles away, but I do come from the state of Washington in support of this so that it doesn't go into Washington as well. I got clean in Oregon.
Identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Carolyn Gabby Escalera, and I do support Senate Bill 154. Sorry, I get nervous. I've never had the honor of being in an Oxford house. I got clean in 1983. Monday I'll be celebrating 24 years of sobriety and in recovery. And so they weren't on this part of the world when I got clean. And so I don't have the first-hand knowledge of being in an Oxford house. But I do work with, because I do work as a sponsor with those who are just coming in. I have sponsees that go in and out of Oxford houses. I also have two adult children who are looking at Oxford houses. One of them, unfortunately, right now is in prison and may be paroling into an Oxford house. I have another one who's finishing high school and will be going to an Oxford house after that. At least that's the plan at this time. And the nice thing about Oxford houses is they always assure a clean and sober environment, as do I do at my own home. I was asked recently if I ever found drug in my boys' possession while they lived at my home, would I require them to leave my home? There was no hesitation. I gave a resounding yes. I have done that, actually, and I'd do it again. Okay, I have smaller children in the home that I have to protect as well. If they choose to go out back into their active addiction, there is no negotiation there. It puts the entire home in jeopardy, not only in my home, but in an Oxford house situation as well. And there are two angles at this. There's those that are staying in the Oxford house. There are those that are leaving. Sorry, I just lost my place. By allowing Oxford houses to be exempt from the landlord-tenant law, it not only protects those that stay clean, but allows those who do relapse to take responsibility and to be held accountable for their actions. It's a choice. Oxford houses aren't just about a physical place to be. They're about the emotional and spiritual support that the residents have for one another. They're about learning responsibilities through chores and actions. They're about being accountable to themselves as a whole and individually and to others. They're about working together as a family for a common goal. And sometimes in order to protect the house as a whole, they have to remove individuals who choose to return to their active addiction in hopes that the individuals will find the strength to pull themselves back up.
Can you sum up?
Yes, I am. Thank you. For all these reasons, I guess I'm here today to ask that you allow Oxford houses to be exempt of the tenant-landlord. Laws or landlord tenant laws. I'm sorry. Thank you again.
Thank
for
you
allowing
very much.
Me to share my testimony, and I'm here for any questions.
Questions? All right. Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, Committee, my name is Frank Wall. I'm an attorney. I practice landlord-tenant law in the Portland area. I've done that since 1973. I got involved in landlord-tenant law as a student at the University of Oregon Law School. I lobbied for the adoption of what we have now as a residential landlord and tenant law. I was a VISTA volunteer and a staff attorney with Multnomah County Legal Aid Services. After my time there, I operated a public interest law firm representing tenants and eviction proceedings. I'm a founder and a past president of the Portland Tenants Union. I currently represent both landlords and tenants, mostly in eviction courts. Over the last 10 years, I've probably represented or appeared in excess of 1,000 eviction cases, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 154. The landlord-tenant laws work well for the traditional landlords and traditional tenants. Oxford House is neither of those. A traditional landlord-tenant relationship has a landlord who has primarily a financial or economic interest in a house and a tenant who is looking primarily for a place to live. Oxford House doesn't fit that model, and neither do its tenants. If I apply to Oxford House to be a member, I'm interviewed by someone, and I'm screened. That looks like a landlord-tenant relationship. However, the relationship and the similarity to the landlord-tenant ends there. Once a person becomes a member of Oxford House, they are participating in the decisions that a landlord would normally make. So those decisions are made by the House, and they're made by, in a democratic process, and the majority controls. The issue most of the speakers have addressed here is the problem of what happens when someone relapses and how long it takes to remove a person under the landlord-tenant procedures. Oregon requires, in most situations, for a landlord to give a 30-day termination notice. There are some limited situations where a tenant can be given a 24-hour eviction notice, and probably most of the speakers here today, both for and against the bill, support the idea of Oxford House being able to give its tenants 24-hour notices if it is under the Landlord-Tenant Act. However, no judge has confirmed yet that that's an acceptable process for Oxford House to follow, and a court could rule that it's necessary for an Oxford House to give a member who's relapsed a 30-day eviction notice, which of course means the tenant person can stay there for 30 days. Whatever the process and whatever the type of notice the tenant can be given, if the person does not vacate timely at the end of that notice period, it's necessary to go through a forcible entry and detainer action and eviction action in court. The way that process works is the landlord first files with the court. An initial hearing is scheduled 8 days later. At that initial hearing, the judges instruct the tenants and the landlords to go in the hall and try and work out a settlement. If they're able to work out a settlement agreement, then that comes back and the court adopts it. Often those types of settlements involve a payment plan or involve an agreement on part of the tenant to vacate on a specific date. If such an agreement is reached between the Oxford House and its members, they come back and report that to the court. We have been involved in a couple of eviction cases that came to that stage and the tenants agreed to vacate in about a two-week period. Given how long it takes for FED cases to be tried and the nature of the court proceedings, a two-week delay at that point is probably reasonable in terms for both parties to get the case resolved. If it's not resolved at that point, law requires the case to be scheduled for trial within 15 days. If there's a trial and Oxford House prevails at trial, the process of then having a sheriff remove someone involves first the court issuing what's called a notice of restitution, which involves at least a minimum of a four-day notice to the tenant to vacate. After that time is expired, then the Oxford House can return to the court and have a execution of the judgment of restitution issued and schedule a time for the sheriff to come and lock the occupant out. That process usually takes another 3 or 4 days. Removing somebody that has relapsed can take a long time and is inconsistent with the requirements of Oxford House traditions and its goals to be able to remove somebody if they relapse immediately and much less than the time it takes to go through court. I'm in support of Senate Bill 154, and I urge the committee to adopt it.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Carter.
You only have 5 more minutes, and I'm not.
I just found out that we can be here for another hour, and I know some of you may have other meetings, but I would like to get the testimony on record.
Great.
Okay.
Then my question, I forgot your name.
Frank Wolf.
Mr. Wolf. I
too, I'm a great supporter of, this is my first time hearing about Oxford House. My concern is how do we keep from imbalancing the landlord-tenant laws that we have in place now that you work so hard for, so that we can give other landlords their rights and their privileges too, but at the same time support Oxford House.
What the bill proposes is to exempt Oxford House from the Landlord-Tenant Act so that it's not, doesn't have to follow these procedures and can act outside of them. The exclusion is fairly specifically drawn so that it doesn't draw in other landlords or inappropriate landlord-tenant relationships. There, as the landlord-tenant law exists now, there is not an appropriate method for Oxford House or an appropriate vehicle for Oxford House to use to remove relapsed members, primarily because the necessity of going through court. And it's the court action that this bill is designed to exclude Oxford House from.
Okay.
Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's my question.
Thank you. Any other further questions? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, not a question per se, because I do have another engagement I have to go to. First off, for Carolyn, congratulations on your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're all nervous being up here, and I can tell you not to be, and you still will be, but just so you'll know, in March I'll be celebrating 21 years. So, and the purpose behind that is just to let you know that we're just folks. Okay, we're unfortunate enough to get elected, I guess. So, but Madam Chair, I do support what we're after here. I truly do. But as in all things, we need to hear all testimony, because so oftentimes a really good idea might have unintended consequences, and we need to make sure that we can do what needs to be done without doing something we don't need to do.
Right.
So,
okay. Thank you, Senator Cruz. All right. Let's call Ed Johnson and Ari Rapkin. Oh, and Bob Nickel, you're next. Bob, I know you are. Do you want to go ahead first? Go ahead, Ed.
Chairman Anderson, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify in front of you this morning. My name is Ed Johnson, and I'm a housing attorney with the Oregon Law Center. As you may know, the Law Center, along with Legal Aid Services of Oregon, provides civil legal services to low-income people throughout the state of Oregon. With our housing work, our goal, not surprisingly, is to maintain stable and affordable housing for people and to keep them out of homelessness. It is with that mission in mind that I offer my testimony against Senate Bill 154. First, I want to say I have great respect for the people who've testified before me, and I hope that just because we disagree about this piece of legislation, that everyone in this room knows that. Senate 154 is a housing bill, and it is a very dangerous housing bill. When you take types of housing out of the Landlord-Tenant Act, you remove the basic protections that the law provides. Central to the discussion here is the right to a safe and peaceful eviction where the sheriff comes out and removes people. Self-help eviction is fraught with violence, not only for the person being evicted, but in some cases for the people who are doing the evicting. And I would think that that is especially true where people have relapsed and are disruptive. This bill is not a referendum on Oxford House. Oxford House is a success story. It is a wonderful model. It is thriving in Oregon, and we want to do whatever we can to make sure that it thrives in Oregon. This bill would take away fundamental rights from every resident in Oxford House around the state of Oregon. And the difference between my testimony and the testimony that you've heard is probably a matter of perspective. My perspective is that people have come into our offices over the last several years, several people who have been voted out of their Oxford houses with 15 minutes verbal notice for issues that had nothing to do with relapse. Imagine trying to clear out your office in 15 minutes, much less your home. Imagine further that you didn't have any friends or family to turn to when you were kicked out. That is the way that people become homeless. One woman in McMinnville was working at McDonald's with her supervisor, who was also one of her co-tenants in the local Oxford House. They had a dispute at work about shift scheduling. That night, the supervisor called a meeting and convinced the members of the House to vote my client out of the House with her young child with 15 minutes verbal notice. Another woman in Southeast Portland got into a dispute that did escalate to name-calling but was still a pretty routine dispute between housemates about a cat being on a couch and who got to do laundry first. She lost her vote 4-2 and was told verbally that she had to be out in 15 minutes. A third client in Hillsborough who had been in jail and found out about Oxford House while in jail moved into a house that, unbeknownst to him, was run by white supremacists. Unbeknownst to them, he was part Native American. That house had a swastika flag in the living room. He had nowhere else to go, so he stuck it out. When they found out he was part Native American, the name-calling started, and he was voted out pursuant to Oxford House rules. Now, Oxford House, of course, does not endorse any of that. This is not about whether Oxford House agrees with any of those three scenarios. The problem is, even good housing providers like Oxford House need to have procedural protections in place, because majority rule without minority rights can stampede the rights of minorities, and has done so in this case. One of my cases had the rare opportunity of going all the way to the Oregon Supreme Court, the one involving the cat on the couch. And the Oregon Supreme Court unanimously held that Oxford House was covered by the Landlord-Tenant Act. That decision was written by former Chief Justice Wally Carson, who, when he was a member of this body, was instrumental in drafting the Landlord-Tenant Act. That decision understands the broad coverage of the act, the narrow nature of the exemptions, and the fact that Oregon law already has a provision that deals with very fast eviction of people who relapse in drug and alcohol-free housing within the contours of due process of law. During the course of our negotiations with DHS, we have offered many things. One recently was that Oxford House be allowed to expel relapsed members without going to court at all. And that was a difficult stretch for us, but I was convinced by the kind of testimony that you've heard here this morning, and others on our side were convinced by it. That was rejected initially, but Bob Nickel told me this morning that there may be an opportunity to go back to the table and try to work out a compromise on that issue, and I hope that that is true, because I think Oxford House needs to be able to get rid of relapsed tenants quickly, if not, maybe not within 15 minutes, but quickly, so that it doesn't jeopardize the sobriety of people in the house. For other things like non-payment of rent and disputes between housemates, I am not at all convinced that Oxford House members don't deserve the same procedural protections as other tenants in Oregon. And for that reason, I oppose this bill, and I suggest that it should not be passed into law.
Thank you very much. Questions? Good testimony. Ari?
Chairman Anderson and members of the committee.
And move the microphone close to you.
Chairman Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Ari Rapkin, and I'm here this morning to testify against Senate Bill 154. I work with a community alliance of tenants, and we're a statewide grassroots renters' rights organization. One of the main activities that we carry out is to operate the renters' rights hotline, where renters who have questions or concerns can call and just get basic information about their rights and practical suggestions about their tenancies. And every day on the hotline, we receive calls from low-income tenants who are facing tremendous barriers to maintaining stable housing. And the majority of our callers are very low-income and don't have an abundance of choices around their housing. So when troubles arise in a particular situation, it's not such a simple matter for low-income tenants to pick up and move if they can't resolve the problem that they're having. The apartment that they're in now is the only thing between them and homelessness. So I'm very concerned about Senate Bill 154 for two reasons. First, exempting Oxford Houses from the basic protections of landlord-tenant law would create an environment ripe for discrimination and retaliation by allowing residents to kick out a housemate without any justification or accountability for their actions. it would eliminate the court process for a remnant, for a resident that is unfairly treated to defend themselves. And second, we're concerned that, as written, the language of the bill would remove a much broader range of tenants from the critical protections of the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act than just those living in Oxford houses. Oxford houses should absolutely be given the opportunity to succeed in providing stable alcohol and drug-free housing for people in recovery. However, we believe that there's insufficient evidence to suggest that the model will not work while providing tenants the due process protections under the Landlord-Tenant Act. You know, all tenants deserve basic protections under landlord-tenant law to ensure fair treatment, and because this population is so vulnerable, these basic protections are all the more necessary. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions? All right. Bob Nickel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Nickel, Assistant Director of the Department of Human Services, and I'm in charge of the Addictions and Mental Health Division. I provided the committee with written testimony in favor of House Bill or Senate Bill 154. what we've tried to do in our testimony is to offer the possibility of a couple of more amendments that would try to help clarify this. We've been in discussion with legal aid advocates as well as our own Oxford House constituents. I want to insert here that I'm very proud of the testimony that they've provided today, and I think they're eloquent arguments for why we need to find some solution to this issue. I also believe that if we had an opportunity to continue negotiation with legal aid, there is some chance that we could find a way to do this under the Oregon Landlord-Tenant Act. I don't want to presume that we can do that at this point, but I am willing to sit down and make a continued effort in that direction to see whether there's a way we can do this. If not, we would, of course, continue to the advocacy for Senate Bill 154 as with a couple of the amendments as we've suggested them. So I guess in conclusion, I would just say that I think that this issue is so important to find a ground that allows Oxford houses to continue and yet respects the rights that people need to have for some form of due process. Those are the outlines of the issue, and I would commit to the division to sitting down and continuing this discussion.
Thank you very much. Yes, Senator Courtney?
I don't have your testimony in front of me. You say allow Oxford House.
It was actually passed with 154, I think.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I mean,
you say allow Oxford houses to continue, so they're not going to continue. Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chair, Senator Courtney, they will continue. I think the question that's before all of us.
Okay, let me ask this then. Mr. Johnson, your written testimony says that this is a Maryland corporation, and it's 1,000 homes like this across the country, 148 in Oregon. Is that correct?
That's correct, as far as I know.
As far as you know. That's what I'm trying to establish here, technically, counsel. And you want them to thrive, and you think that they are thriving, correct? Is that right?
Certainly my understanding. They're growing in Oregon.
Is that your understanding too, Mr. Nichols?
Madam Chair, Senator Courtney, that is my clear understanding.
And we're receiving a lot of testimony. They are working. Their mission is
working.
That
is correct.
Right. I just needed to get that on the record as I listened to this discussion.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And we have someone from now, Marla from the...
Labor.
Marla's Labor. So no further questions for this panel. Marla's Labor.
Madam Chair,
Hurd.
I had my hand up. I'm so busy. Yeah. But Bob Nickel, I would like to make sure that you're working with the Law Center, because as much as I totally, totally support this program and things are working, I do think that every human being and deserve the right to have protection. And so I want to see you guys work together, see what we can come up with. It is a new model, but it sounds like it's working and it's successful. But we want to keep a balance in our landlord-tenant laws that people have worked and struggled so hard for in terms of civil rights, because this does become a civil rights issue. And so I want to make sure that that is respected and that everyone that gets in the program, because I tell you, listening to the director from Medford, I am so impressed with you and your presentation, and where you've come from and where you are going and helping other people. I want to see the Oxford House be successful, but I don't want unintended consequences. So you will be working with the Law Center.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, yes, we will work with the Law Center.
Very good.
See if we can find a solution.
Great, great.
Go ahead, Marlis.
Hello, my name is Marlis Labor, for the record. I'm the administrator for the Asset Property Management Division of Oregon Housing and Community Services. Not having the ability to listen to the previous testimony, I'm a bit of a disadvantage. I was actually working at my desk when I received a call from your aide asking for us to come down. The comments that I have are really off the cuff, and frankly, I have a bit of a bias here because I, too, have a family member in the program of recovery. And through the grace of God, this person has been sober for many years now. I've been a professional in the real estate business and in affordable housing for over 20 years. I know about Oxford Homes intimately. I understand recovery, and I also understand the dilemma that we are in this state. Oxford Houses do work, and they are working in this state, and we need them to provide this very important housing for those people in recovery. Overall, the agency would be in support of Senate Bill 154. Senator Carter, I could not have said it better myself. I think there are things that we may be able to do in future negotiations. I also believe that it's imperative that we address this in this legislative session. Absolutely imperative. I think it's important for the committee to know that there are certain federal regulations around the programs that some of these are funded with that would prohibit the immediate, even though Oregon landlord-tenant law, state Oregon landlord-tenant law, we may exclude it, there are program requirements that will require that specific notice be given, I believe, in our federal regulations. However, again, I've not done in-depth investigation about that. But for instance, properties that have been funded through our agency with home dollars, which is a federal subsidy program. It's a federal program, and they do not allow for month-to-month tenancy. And so through that, I believe that the residents will have some protection, and many of these properties are funded with state dollars. I understand how difficult it is for a member to be evicted in very short notice. However, I also understand how difficult it is for the other residents that are in and trying to continue to remain sober in this kind of environment if they have someone that is truly disruptive, has returned to drinking or using. It's very, very difficult for those other people in the house. I believe, anecdotally, through the chair that I sit on, that we hear very few stories like the ones that were just testified about. There's always issues in any kind of landlord-tenant law like that. There are exceptions. They are very unfortunate. I do not believe that it is the rule. For those matters, I would say that in general, Oregon Housing and Community Services is in favor of this Senate bill going forward. I would be happy to assist on any negotiations as they go forward, but I do believe that this is absolutely the imperative that it be addressed as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Senator Courtney.
I don't understand what you just said. You fix what? There is a problem. How are they doing it now? I just don't understand where you are on this issue. It needs to be fixed because the homes are not working now.
It's Chair Mons Anderson, Senator Courtney. No, I believe it is working now. I believe.
How is it working now? What are they? Tell me how it's working now.
Yeah. Excuse me. I apologize. It is not working the way it is now. I think Oxford houses, in general, are working just fine.
Okay.
Although I believe that if this is the law, currently is the deterrent to the inner workings of an Oxford house. Because if a resident does go back to drinking, goes back to using, if there are behavioral problems associated with that, currently the law does not allow for immediate eviction. So when I said I believe that it was working, I believe Oxford houses as a whole work, but this is an issue that does prohibit them from being more successful.
Meaning someone who is using, they've gone through rehabilitation, they get into Oxford or any type of home, and they start using, under the current law, if they're using, they cannot be taken out without this due process of usually 30 days. And by keeping them in the home, it actually affects the others that are in the home and brings them down. So we need this law to sort of tweak that piece. I think that what Ed Johnson gave us regarding those other situations, you are saying don't happen very often. Is that correct? Yes.
Correct.
But still, the way it's written, we would need to address to make sure that it was due process and it was truly related to use, abuse, and not paying the rent or having a cat or those types of things. I think that's what I'm sort of getting
at. And
from
I apologize for not making it clear, but that is my testimony.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Brittany Burton, Barlin Soa, and Edward Smith. Okay, thank you. Proceed.
Madam Chairman Anderson and committee members, my name is Edward Smith, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you on behalf of Oxford Houses of Oregon in support of Senate Bill 154. My story and my testimony is very similar to the other members that have spoke to you already today. I currently sit on the State Board of Oxford Houses of Oregon as the Housing Services Chair. I've been heavily involved with Oxford Houses for approximately 3 years now. Things that I want to cover are relating to some of the questions that I've heard. I would like to say that before the Supreme Court judgment came down, so Oxford Houses before, in the state of Oregon, our system works. You know, we have in handouts that we gave you guys, we have very set traditions, principles that our houses are ran on. One of our traditions says that no member to be kicked out without just cause. So we have procedures within our houses that when there's a behavior problem, there's contracts within the houses. These are peer rent houses, so these other members notice the behavior problems. They are put on contracts to help change the behavior problems of the person. So it's not an immediate expulsion. The only times that we ask for immediate, or in the past that we asked for immediate expulsions, was someone relapsing, someone I'm nervous, showing outrageous and in the extreme behaviors, such as violence, physical violence, threats of violence. Our houses our house is also, as far as the financial aspect, the problem with us keeping people in our house financially, our houses are self-ran, self-supported, so all our bills, we pay all our own bills, our land, we pay our rent, we pay all the utilities, everything. Our houses are set up when a lease is signed for the amount of people in the house. We do what's called a viability on our house. So our lease and what we bring people in at is sticks to what we can afford. So if one person doesn't pay their equal expenses shared, we don't call it rent. If one person, one member of this house does not pay their equal expenses shared, there's a possibility of bringing the whole house down. So there's another problem that I haven't heard being covered here, as far as we're required now to give a 72-hour notice for failure to pay rent, which can turn into 2 weeks, 6 weeks, as far as getting somebody out of our house. That really our houses are about learning a new way of life. It's peer rental group. We hold each other accountable. We're trying to change our lives, and to be able to come in and use, if somebody's in the house is using, people are not paying their rent. People are just displaying disruptive behavior. How can we, it's just going to bring the houses down.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Senator.
I'm hearing good stuff, and so I'm the mother of 9 children. I know what it's like to have a brood, okay? and I know what it's like for somebody to become incorrigible, mm-hmm. and I feel like throwing them out. However, I can't do that because of my responsibility. How can you, as a state overseer, a state board member, make sure that all things are equal in terms of the internal laws of Oxford House, so that when two people, and it's so human, when two people on the same job together don't get along, that you can go back and take that issue to the house? That, to me, that is not a house issue. Those are individual issues. How can you, as a state board member, have some kind of oversight so those kind of situations won't take place, where a person can take an external issue and bring it into the internal affairs of the house and then rule that person suspended?
These situations happen very rarely, these kind of personal situations. We have, the way we have it set up is we do trainings. We have, constant on our state board. There's five to ten members on the state board, and there's our chapter officers that, we have 19 chapters within the state association. When there's a problem in a house that usually arises, a chapter officer is usually called, and us as state board members, we go in, we advise our chapter officers how to handle it. Our chapter officers are understand personals and not personalities is how we look at it, and what we push on a constant basis is personals or principles, not personalities. And so the only driving force behind that is constant training, constant speaking with the members of the house, members of chapters, and talking to houses on a regular basis.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And go ahead.
Madam Chair, my name is Anderson and committee members. I would like to thank you for this opportunity to submit my written testimony and support Senate Bill 154. My name is Brittany Burton. I am 15 years old and currently living in a Men and Children's Oxford House with my sister and father, Bart Soa, in the Portland community. I lived over two-thirds of my life with drug-addicted parents, up all night, up all day. Sleep did not matter, food did not matter. All my sister and I ever saw was nonstop fighting, drug abuse, and doors being shut in our faces. Did they not love us? Did they not care? They did, but our parents were trapped in a thing called addiction. They were addicted to a life-swallowing illness called methamphetamines. When you abuse drugs or alcohol, your life quickly drifts away from you. Your personal care, your hobbies, and your family no longer matter. The only cure for this illness is to escape from the environment you're in and strive to find help. Oxford Houses have given mine and many mothers and fathers a chance to truly prosper and grow from an addict to something much greater. These homes and communities of Oxford Houses have opened a new door to life for these struggling parents. With the opportunity to make a change and a difference in our world, over my 4 years of the Oxford experience, I have witnessed men and women reunite with their children and family every day. My sister and I have been living in the Rock Island House going on 5 years. To be able to share the experiences with other children and watch them grow in a safe and happy environment has been very special to me. I am not completely sure you could fully understand what Oxford has given me. I am very proud to say Bart Soa has become the father that drugs and alcohol has hid from my family for so long. He is no longer addicted. For this, I thank the many people who are willing to help my father and the house that had open arms, Oxford. Based on the fact of my very own life experiences, the fears that come to my mind when I think of a person being allowed to maintain living in our home over a long period of time frightens me. We are a family, and this is our home that we share for men who wish to become fathers. This is a safe place I and many children call home. For these reasons, for the safety of every man, woman, and child, I ask please support Senate Bill 154. Thank you.
Marla, thank you very much. Usually we don't have young people come very often. I really applaud you for coming and sharing your story. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Senator and distinguished committee members. My name is Bart Soa. I'm the Chapter Services Chairperson for the State of Oregon Oxford Houses. And I'm also a member of the Ross Island Oxford House, which is the Men with Children House. I came to the Oxford Houses nearly 5 years ago, unemployable, homeless, and a father of children that were scattered here and there. And, you know, I wasn't able to seek treatment because I had no home, and I wasn't able I've been suffering from addiction since childhood, and 17 years ago I started using methamphetamines, and it took away my home and my children, and any functional addict I had was stripped from me. And I came across Oxford Houses, and I've been there for nearly 5 years. They showed me a new way to live, and they helped me one day at a time to stay clean. And part of coming into an Oxford House, there were some policies and expectations that I was made aware of. And one of the expectations or policies was that, you know, if I was to return to active addiction, that I'd be asked to leave that housing. And that seemed really reasonable to me because there's other people suffering from the disease just like I was suffering. And, you know, there's an answer. There's no cure, but there's a way we can get out of the disease. And we help each other do that. I've been in the Ross Island House for nearly 4 years, and I keep saying house, but what this place is really is a home, where we have fathers, and we, all the members there, we treat each other as family members. When we interview people, we interview them, and we accept them into our family. And, they're with children, and we have, support systems in place. We, have emergency contact numbers for them. In case they were to relapse, we would have an emergency plan. We would never, a person that is expelled is never, they're a family member, and we'd never lay hands on them. We're not allowed to be violent in an Oxford House. We have a plan. We'd go to their file. We'd contact the emergency numbers, the people that where the family, the children are supposed to go. I mean, we have safety barriers set up, so nobody is sent to the streets. I love every individual that comes in that house. I've been there for 4.5 years, not because I have to. I have a good job. I make good, nearly $17 an hour, and I have nearly 5 years of recovery. But I go there to share my experience and strength and hope with other fathers, and in hopes that they get what I have. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very powerful. All right. Thank you very much. And Ann Euler and Kimberly Hansen and Amber Park. And the last one that's four is Arnold Copez. Go ahead, Ann.
Chair Moss Anderson, appreciate your, and members of the committee, appreciate your having hearing on this bill. I am Ann Euler. I am the chair of the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Programs. And we support the bill with some amendments. And I want to give you, for the record, I want to read something to you, even though it's in front of your, so that you, because I'm representing the council. Council recently adopted a resolution around stigma reduction.
And this is the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs.
Programs, that's correct. And the resolution is that treatment for alcohol and other drug disease should be personalized to each person's cultural and social factors and based on the best scientific protocols and standard of care, including the use of appropriate medications, behavioral therapies, and ancillary services that significantly enhance the likelihood of success. Furthermore, that public housing agencies and providers of Section 8 and other federally assisted housing should use discretion given to them in public housing law to help people get treatment, rather than permanently barring them and their families from housing. That's the backdrop of why I think we can support Senate Bill 154. However, we do have some concerns in why we think some amendments and are willing to work with the Department of Human Services and the legal aid to, or legal folks to come up with some amendments about the protection. Our concern is this, is that although the Oxford House has good charter, a charter that builds on supporting individuals and reasons for discharging, this actually applies to many different kinds of recovery homes. And our concern as a council is that there's no consistent policy around why are people discharged from transition houses, from actually residential centers, and recovery homes and Oxford houses. So we thought that with an amendment that allowed the department to come up with some administrative rules so that we could be assured that there was some consistency about why people were being discharged would be an excellent addition to this bill, and I think it gives us that opportunity. And the reason that, part of the reason that we're concerned about that is this is a chronic illness. It's a relapsing illness. And so that people need to be considered across the continuum of care. So what happens when they they're discharged, they need they're obviously in need of treatment or because of the relapse. So what happens to that person? And I'll tell you, as the long experience is, it just depends. And what we're asking for is a policy that clearly lays out what happens to these two folks who relapse and to assure that they get the next piece of treatment that they need. And so that's the...
Thank you. And I think what I would like to do is, I'm not sure if Frank Wall would be willing and Bob Nickel and the Oregon Law Commission, but Ed, could you take, or someone, Sybil, Ed, get together to work on a group, and do you have those names, Josh, and to make sure that it's on the record that they are going to get together, and should we say Bob's office coordinate those people. Okay. Thank you, Ann. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Monique Anderson, and the committee members, I'd like to thank you for letting me testify. I'm in support of Bill 154.
And introduce yourself.
I'm Kimberly Hansen.
And who do you have with you?
This is my daughter, Lexis.
And how old is she?
She is 4 months.
Okay.
I currently live in a Women and Children's Oxford House, and I moved into the house when it opened July 5th of 2006. The house president, and I moved in after completing drug and alcohol treatment. I moved in because I knew it would be a sober environment for me to live and raise my baby in. If I hadn't moved into a place that supported my recovery, I would have probably gone back onto the streets. And that's why I went into treatment and sought out an Oxford house, so I would stay in recovery and have my baby and not lose her. With the house being at zero tolerance to any drug and alcohol use, with the consequences of immediate eviction, keeps the recovery the focus for everyone in our house. There's so much jeopardized. Child welfare could take my child. I could become homeless again. I would be in violation of my probation and end up back in jail. The house has helped me to learn to hold myself accountable for my actions and deal with conflicts in a healthy manner and take constructive criticism from everyone in the house. The main thing that I've learned from living there with supportive people there is how to live clean and sober. I wouldn't have been able to do this without the support of the girls in the house and of other Oxford houses and the support from our chapter and state association. They help keep the focus of all the houses recovery. And in conclusion, I support Senate Bill 154.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
It's nice to have a child, a little baby in the house.
Okay. Hi, Madam Chair Anderson and members of the committee. My name is Amber Park. I'm currently an Oxford resident. I've been there almost 17 months, and I've had the honor of opening up an Oxford house as well as living a couple to help them mentor. I am a product of my environment. For the first 30 years of my life, I was a methamphetamine addict. I grew up that way. I have several family members that are that way. I've been through prison. I've been through treatment and all types of different programs and cognitive restructuring programs. And the only thing I found that has worked for me has been Oxford House in conjunction with a 12-step program. I'm in total support of Bill 154. I have seen numerous people come in and out of Oxford houses. Unfortunately, I have been in a position where I've had to enforce the 15-minute rule or whatnot. And I guess what I want to get across is when you move to an Oxford house, the guidelines and rules are clearly stated. You sign contracts knowing what is going on. You don't just move in as a tenant. You move in, like Bart was saying, as a family member. The people in my house are my family. They're my sisters. I live in a woman and children's house. And they're close to me than my own family. You know, it's not like we just say, all right, get out. It's, you know, okay, look, you know you have to leave. What can we do to help you? You know, it's about becoming an accountable, responsible, and productive member of society. And like I said, I went from being a criminal and a drug addict to a college student. I work two jobs, and I am very heavily involved in Oxford, and that's due to Oxford. And I would just like hope that you guys would pass the bill as it stands. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Question? All right. Let's have Cal Peoples and Arnold Lopez, and then it'll be John Vanden Laudenham, Bob Jundep, and Peggy McGuire. They will wrap it up for us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chair Manas Anderson and distinguished committee members, I'm Cal Peoples. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 154. I'm a grateful alumnus of Oxford Houses here in Salem. My recovery has progressed to the point that I felt comfortable moving from Oxford just a few weeks ago after 2 years. During that period, I served as Chapter 4 chairman under Oxford House old eviction guidelines, as well as the current ones, which are consistent with the Oregon Landlord-Tenant Act. The new guidelines, from a hands-on leadership standpoint, are problematic, unrealistic, and at times dangerous. One of the primary reasons anyone enters an Oxford house is to insulate themselves from the people, places, and things that they were associated with while active in their disease of addiction. How are we to protect ourselves, our members, and children in an atmosphere of drugs or alcohol abuse for a period that may be as long as 30 days? It's not just a matter of the individual drug or alcohol use itself. It's the associated behaviors when one is in the relapse mode. That is, violence, theft, damage to property, and noncompliance to house rules. It's a demonstrated fact that relapse in a recovery house setting can be as contagious as influenza or Ebola. As a leader in Oxford House, I can tell you, as many times as not, if one in the house has relapsed, so has another, and perhaps another, and perhaps another. In conclusion, Senate Bill 154 will offer homes the legitimacy and capability they require and deserve. I'd also like to speak to the issue brought up about evicting and expelling people without just cause. Oxford, as said before, has traditions in place that we all try to follow. In conjunction with those traditions, there's a system in place. There are house officers that are accountable. If someone were to get kicked out and they didn't like the house officer's decision, they could go to the chapter. There's at least five chapter officers that are accessible where they could appeal their case before they were ultimately put out in the street. If they didn't like that decision, they could go to the state association and get intervention there if it was called for. So there is a system in place. Thank you again for allowing me to share my testimony in support of 154 with you today. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you so much. Question? Okay.
Madam Chair, Moniz Anderson and committee, I'd like to give my testimony in support of Senate Bill 154. Basically, my testimony was going to be my family members behind me testified to a lot of what I had to say. So,
introduce yourself.
My name is Arnold Lopez. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. You know, I used drugs and alcohol majority of my life. You know, some would describe me as a functional addict. Because I had a job and paid my taxes and lived in a nice home. But in 2003, I found myself incarcerated. And with lost family members and significant others, I was offered the Oregon Summit program, which I completed. And with $25 and nowhere to go because of family relations, I was suggested by counselor to go to Oxford House. Oxford House took me in, the Marlin House in Beaverton, Oregon. Today, they are my family, my friends, and the people I count on to lean on. You know, without them, you know, who knows where I'd be today. When I first got into the Marlin House, my perception was, you know, it was a halfway house, and I would only be there 1 or 2 months, get back on my feet, get my job. It's 53 weeks later, I'm still in the Marlin House. I'm clean and sober. I'm the chapter chair in Washington County. And from my dealing with Oxford and chapter, our traditions clearly state that we will not throw anybody out for just cause. You know, if there's an issue in the house, I go there and we diplomatically go through the house process on how we're going to fix the problem. You know, members go on behavioral contracts. Like myself, when I moved into the Marlin House, we had some children there. They put me on a behavioral contract for using profanity in front of young ones. You know, I knew at that point that I needed to change my behavior to stay in that house. So I corrected that behavior. And I'm still there today. So another thing I wanted to mention was when I was released from the Oregon Summit program, one of my conditions of parole were not to hang around people known active in their addiction. Well, now they're telling me today that I have to live with these people, jeopardizing my freedom.
you know, until we get a court hearing, whatever. So I would like to ask for your support on House Bill 154 so that Oxford can continue to provide safe and homes for people active, not active in their addiction. I'm nervous. So I believe from my heart that the counties, the states, and Department of Corrections, and Oxford Housing Oregon have a vision that no one has to ever use again. So please help us support. Please help us go forward, not three steps backwards.
Thank you very, yeah. very much. Okay, question? All right, the final three. John von Laudenham. Is it Bob Jundiff? And Peggy McGuire.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I might, my name is John Van Landingham. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm a legal aid lawyer in Lane County. I'm here to ask that you not move the bill, that you direct DHS to work with us to see if we can find a compromise on what is obviously a very important issue. I have worked as an attorney representing low-income tenants for almost 30 years. I have represented tenants in negotiations for legislation in every legislative session since 1993. I have negotiated and written every amendment to the Landlord-Tenant Act since 1993. I helped to negotiate ORS 90.243, which allows Central City Concern in Portland and sponsors in Eugene to house thousands of recovering addicts using a 48-hour eviction process for relapsers. I also want to note that I have previously advocated on behalf of Oxford House with regard to land use matters. Oxford House's prior legal struggle was over zoning restrictions on their ability to use single-family houses, and I advocated in Eugene to allow them to do that. So I support Oxford House. Let me jump right to the point. We have two concerns, as noted in my written testimony. The first is some ability to test or limit Oxford House's total exclusion from the Landlord-Tenant Act. There's a lot more to the Landlord-Tenant Act than simply notice and eviction procedure. We have offered Oxford House and DHS what is an extraordinary remedy to us, and that is to allow them to immediately oust any relapser without a court process. And I've attached a copy of the draft proposal that I drafted and submitted to them on January 19th. The second concern that we have is the broadness of the exemption. The last page of my written testimony breaks down what this language actually would require. Without making you or trying to make you go through each item there, this is much broader than Oxford House. I have represented tenants in Eugene who rented a sofa for $200 a month. They were all mentally ill, mentally disabled people. The landlord preyed on them, rented them sofas in a slum house with an open sewer in the backyard. He could qualify under this definition. He is a private, quote, residential program. Nobody knows what that means. There's no definition to it. Who provides, as a primary purpose, support for people with disabilities. Our concern is that if this is adopted as it is, a lot of landlords, and I can tell you, having done this since 1977, every landlord resents the time and cost and delay of doing court process. A lot of landlords will try to use this exemption. Thank you.
Yes, President Clark.
Yeah, Counsel, I'm curious, in view of what you said, you offered these amendments and the written testimony of the Oregon Law Center, Counsel Johnson said that they offer to the drug and alcohol-free housing provisions be amended to specifically include the Oregon House model. We have offered that Oxford House be allowed to expel tenants who are allegedly relapsed without any court process. The offers were rejected. What happened to your offers?
Madam Chair and Senator Courtney, I was part of those negotiations. The response that we got in an email late Sunday evening was that after reviewing it for 10 days, it was not acceptable. We met again on Monday, the 29th, with Bob Nickel and some of his staff and some people from Oxford House. The focus of the conversation was not so much, we had less than an hour, the focus wasn't on what was wrong with our concept. I asked that question. The response was that 12 hours was too long. I said, well, I thought we were going to negotiate these issues. We're certainly open to negotiating that. But there was no other response as to why our proposal was not workable.
Thank you, Council. Chair Mosa. Thank you, Council.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Gortley.
Another question along that line. In the testimony, the written testimony that we have from Bob Nickel, who is no longer in the room, on the second page, second bullet, in about the middle of that paragraph, it reads, "As a we are proposing to adopt administrative rules to ensure resident safety and due process rights in recovery homes." Could you speak to the intent versus what we're hearing in the testimony, which is the need for statutory language to address the concern?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gordley, we did discuss this with Bob Nickel on this past Monday. What that would get at would be some chance to test the fairness of what is obviously a very quick removal process. Oxford House people have talked extensively about their need for that. We're trying to recognize that. Our proposal that I've attached to my testimony would limit their ability to relapsers and provide a post-ouster sort of remedy. If they abuse it, somebody can recover some money. So we're thinking that would discourage doing it. Bob Nickel suggested on Monday that they might be able to regulate Oxford Houses. We're certainly open to that. We certainly would like to see that language before we sign away or give away the rights of all these residents under the Landlord Tenant Act. I don't know that that's possible in the amount of time this session has. But we also have expressed concern to him about, one, their authority to do that. These entities are not receiving state funds now. Two, what process they would use. Are they proposing to register every Oxford House? I mean, if you're going to regulate somebody, you've got to know who it is that you regulate. Three, what sort of enforcement are you talking about? And four, is there a fiscal impact to that for the department? So we look forward to working with them on that. We certainly respect Bob Nickel's goodwill and commitment to make this work, and we'd like to be a part of that.
Just a follow-up. Is it possible that the pressure of time to get prepared for this hearing, you know, pressure on DHS preparing for a number of bills, and I noticed this testimony is dated January 31st. You referred to a conversation that took place on Sunday, et cetera. Is it possible that the pressure of time got in the way of getting to a compromise, getting to language that DHS and Oregon Law Center and all the parties who are now sitting before us could agree to?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, yes, I believe that's true. We've been meeting with DHS and Oxford House people since July. The suggestion of an administrative process was made to us on Monday. Okay. So we've made other offers trying to move towards a compromise since July.
All right. That's very helpful.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Junduff. I'm the director of the Oregon Advocacy Center. And what brings me here today is because our organization does advocate on behalf of people with disabilities and people with substance addiction come within the definition of disability and are a group of people who we care about and advocate on behalf of. I've been very impressed today by the testimony that we've heard and the courage and dedication of the people involved. I have also participated in the negotiations that we've discussed, and both in terms of formal meetings, which we've had 2 hours of formal meetings, and talked to all the parties, representatives of parties outside of those meetings. I'm totally convinced that everybody here is in complete agreement in their desire to preserve the Oxford House model and to make sure that it works fairly. And the real question has been how to get there. I think this hearing has been very useful for the purposes of encouraging those conversations to continue. They're a little difficult in that we're talking about an entity that has some connection to government but doesn't really have connection to government. The bill also, I'm sure you've noticed, also covers a number of licensed entities such as residential treatment facilities, residential care facilities. Now, those are government licensed and regulated facilities, and they all have administrative rules that provide for process for if a person needs to be removed from that particular service. What we're talking about with Oxford House, really, at least in the discussions, has been an all-or-nothing type of conversation. The nothing being that there's absolutely no protection, no due process that's available for the people who participate in the program. Our feeling is that any person with a disability or any person in Oregon should have the benefit of some sort of process before they have something as important as their housing. Or even a treatment service taken away from them, because in every other area of state, local funded services, folks have some rights before those things can be taken away from them. And at a minimum, that means that a person should have an opportunity to find out why they're being asked to leave, and have some sort of objective, independent decision maker somewhere along the line to see that things are being done fairly. My belief is that that can be accomplished and still preserve this model. I urge the committee to work with all the people involved to accomplish that goal. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Questions? All right.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Peggy McGuire. I'm the Executive Director of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, and our agency is a private nonprofit dedicated to promoting equal access to housing. The bill before you is about housing people who are in recovery. People in recovery are protected as individuals with disabilities under the fair housing laws. 40% of the discrimination complaints that come into our office are from individuals with disabilities. Based on the studies performed by the State of Oregon and also by national organizations such as the National Fair Housing Alliance and HUD, we estimate that approximately 30,000 incidences of discrimination occur every year in Oregon. Less than 15% are reported to HUD or BOLI or the Fair Housing Council, and in nearly 75% of the circumstances, the victims do nothing to stand up for their own rights. They simply go away. Someone out there is discriminating. People have biases, they have prejudices, and I know this is going to surprise you because it shocked the heck out of me when I discovered it. People don't always do the right thing. So the term blackballing kept coming to my mind. And that term is believed to have originated when societies, organizations, democratically governed groups had a process of voting with black or white balls, and it was supposed to make some sort of anonymous decision. No individual could be accused of discriminating because the group had voted on something. For centuries, that process was used to keep people of color out of predominantly white organizations. And with 30,000 acts of discrimination a year in Oregon, I'm pretty confident that some of those are perpetrated by individuals who have the ability to vote someone out of their democratically governed household. We have landlord-tenant laws and restraining orders that create a due process for removing individuals from housing when they violate the rules or become violent. These processes are designed to keep someone from being blackballed because their housemates don't like the fact that their boyfriend is a person of another race, their children are biracial, because their religious practice or the way their disability presents itself makes housemates uncomfortable. These are civil rights issues and should not be subject to the personal bias of roommates. You should not have to leave your home within 15 minutes notice because your roommates decided you didn't fit in quite the way they imagined you would. If your civil rights are violated and you become homeless because of illegal discrimination, it can take years in the HUD enforcement process to obtain any type of restitution for that violation. This is a tough process to stick with when you're homeless, and many of the folks who've testified here today will tell you that in many cases this housing was the only option for them between that and homelessness. The Fair Housing Council of Oregon completely supports the rights of individuals in recovery to live together in supportive housing situations. As a matter of fact, we've actually mediated situations in which landlords have tried to violate the civil rights of Oxford House residents. However, we can't support a bill that would eliminate the right of the rights of a subset of those people with disabilities, the individual residents of the households, by taking away their protections under the current laws. There are landlord-tenant laws in place to deal with individuals living in alcohol and drug-free housing who relapse. Legal Aid Services of Oregon, Oregon Law Center, these folks who've testified before me have told you they've attempted to work with DSHS and Oxford House to amend the landlord-tenant law provisions that relate to removing individuals who relapse to ensure that that law allows action that is expedient enough to meet the needs of the Oxford House residents, but also and similarly situated programs, while ensuring that individual residents have been voted out, do not have their rights violated. But those opportunities and those offers have been rejected. Until some equitable arrangement that protects the rights of all the residents can be arrived at, the Fair Housing Council of Oregon urges you not to support this bill.
Okay, question. Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate very much the testimony of this last panel. I'm confident that we will get to a good bill. We have time to do that. And we have a lot of smart people with all the right expertise to help us do that. And with that said, it's clear that this is a bill that needs more seasoning. The principle of due process cannot and should not be diminished as we find our way forward. But I believe that we have before us a bill that has legs. It just needs stronger legs and better shoes and shoes with good shoelaces and so that it can run to where it needs to go. And the other thing I'll say is I'm just so pleased when we have days like this in the Capitol where we get to hear the voices of people out there in the Oregon community who are affected by the public policy decisions that we make in this building. There are many times when we have hearings and there are no people sitting where you are. And we can make decisions that are not fully informed. That's not all the time, but it does happen. And I just want to, again, note that the presence of people who have the experience with the Oxford House program and all the others who spoke around or from their experience is very, very, very important today. And thank you very much for being here.
I'm one of those landlords that actually rents to people in recovery. And some families I've been successful with, and some families I have not been successful with. But I've been in the family right now is a couple meth addicts. They've gone through treatment, have been through treatment a year. I'm renting to them. They've now got two of their four children back. I have always followed the landlord-tenant laws, and so, but that's a different situation. I feel those who are living together and using each other as a support is a little bit different than me who's taking a family into my own individual home. So somehow, hopefully, when you're looking at that, I feel I should follow, and I have followed the landlord-tenant laws, whether they pay rent or whether I've actually seen them, you know, growing marijuana in the garage or whatever. I'm able to follow the landlord-tenant laws fairly carefully, but I want you to also look at that because residential group living is a little bit different. Thank you. Any other comments, questions? I would like to have amendments back within 2 or 3 weeks because we're on a very tight timeline. So Bob Nickel, who's going to coordinate this, I hope he hears this because I would like amendments back. If I don't have amendments, I'm not going to be moving the bill as is at this point. I want a compromise. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Senator Gordon.
I didn't get a chance.
Senator Carter.
To talk with sisters, and I guess sometime up the line. The other people that spoke, because I am sure that they're going to get together and do a good job, but under no circumstances must we ever give up our civil rights that we've worked so hard to gain. I don't think that's what they want either. They just want a meaningful, clean way by which they can continue to grow and become better citizens in our society, and I know you guys want that too, so I'm looking forward to this bill coming back to us with parties having agreed, but not compromising our civil rights, because as a black woman in America, I have worked too long and too hard and have striven too much laboriously to work on civil rights issues for us to give any of them up.
Here, here. Thank you. Okay, thank you. With that, the meeting's adjourned.